Fort Worth on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Catholic radio for your soul in North Texas. Heard also on grnonline.com and on your smartphone. Faith, hope, charity. This is the Guadalupe Radio Network. Radio for your soul.
Welcome in to the David O. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason on the Guadalupe Radio Network. And we begin in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and the Holy Spirit. O my Jesus, forgive us of our sins, save us from the fires of hell, and lead all souls to heaven, especially those in most in need of thy mercy. It is the afternoon of Wednesday, hump day on Guadalupe Radio Network, so it must be the David L. Gray Show. Today is March 3rd, 2021. Is it a second week of Lent? And I am David L. Gray, and I'm excited that you are tuning in for the next hour of the show. Man, it seems like it was just like 2 weeks ago when much of the United States was covered in snow and parts of Texas was without power and water. Oh, wait, that was 2 weeks ago. Yeah, that was 2 weeks ago. It's amazing how time and weather flies. So to be part of this show, you can call in at 877-757-9424. Again, that is 877-757-9424. You can tweet at me at DLG on GRN. That is DLG on GRN. Also, you just comment on the video. We are streaming on the GRN Guadalupe Radio Network Facebook page and on YouTube. Cecil Anderson of Guadalupe Radio Network is a producer of this show, and you can see her on Fridays at Back to the Father, and that is the voice you'll hear. It belongs to her if you call in to be on the show live. If you have not already, please stop by davidlgray.info and sign up for my newsletter to keep you up to date with what I'm working on. Also, please follow me on YouTube and Rumble and Facebook. If you like, also, please come support me on Patreon, where you'll be rewarded with what I think are the best perks that anyone on Patreon has to offer. You get things like free copies of my books on Kindle and audiobook. You get free mugs and hoodies and t-shirts. And if you belong to my team, Dominic the Guzman, my team, St. Dominic the Guzman, you will be enrolled in my Book of the Month Club. And for February, members receive the free copy of The Imitation of Mary, Keys to Spiritual Growth and Virtue and Grace by Father Quan Tran, who I interviewed last Wednesday on the show. So again, a jumping off point to all that, to get on my mailing list, get on my social media outlets, and to join me on Patreon is David L. Gray. That's grayfna.info. And I think I'm up to like 21,000 plus YouTube subscribers. And I always tell people, and also I think that's a lot. Like, because I think I've really been active for just like 3 years. So I'm really proud of what we've accomplished there and for everyone who supports me there. So yeah, that's I always tell people that I cannot wait until systematic racism is over so then I can have like 100,000 YouTube subscribers, because, well, you know, that's kind of how that works, right? Let me tell you what's going on this month at the David O. Gray Show, voicing truth for reason. In a few minutes today, I'll have on Timothy F. Flanders on the show. He'll be on the show. Timothy is the editor-in-chief of Our Lady of Victory Press, and he produces the content at The Meaning of Catholic, The Meaning of Catholic Apostolate. And today we'll be talking about the meaning of culture. Next Wednesday, March 10th, you'll hear from Dr. Kevin Vost, who is a very well-written author and a Catholic thinker. He's written a new book entitled Aquinas on the Last Four Things. It seems like once a month, I'm like always talking to someone who wants to talk about Thomas Aquinas. So, and that's fine. You know, I love Dominican spirituality. And so St. Thomas Aquinas is someone very important to read and to grow in knowledge with. March 17th, which is the third Wednesday of the month. So that means it's Pro-Life Wednesday, and I will have Miss Janique Stewart on again to talk about what's going on that front. And March 24th is the fourth Sunday of the month, and every fourth Sunday on the David L. Gray Show. The third Wednesday is Pro-Life Wednesday, and the fourth Wednesday is Finance Wednesday, where I speak with, I'll be speaking with financial advisor Kevin Pilon. He'll be talking about finance from the Catholic perspective and answering your questions. And the fifth Sunday, we have a fifth Sunday, fifth Wednesday this month. That would be March 31st, which is also my mother's birthday. And so you'll be, on that day, you'll be hearing from popular YouTuber and evangelist Ray Halba. And he'll be talking about his faith journey and about a new movie he's producing about the Holy Eucharist. And I'm excited about that. So that is the month of March 2021. A lot packed in here. And hope you tune in for that episode. If you're just tuning in, this is the David O. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason on the Guadalupe Radio Network. To be part of the show, you just call in at 877-757-9424. That's 877-9424 again. Or you can tweet at me at hashtag DLG on GRN. That's DLG on GRN. How's your Lent going? How's your Lent going? Remember last week, I discussed how each week of Lent is asking a different question that provokes us into a deeper self-examination. Because typically, when we are faced with those questions, you know, how's your Lent going? We usually respond in context of how whatever you gave up, right? Chocolate, whatever, I've been doing well, or respond in context to how our days of fasting are going. But the liturgical season is asking a deeper question in regards to how your Lent is going. For the first week of Lent, the liturgical readings were trying to get us to think about conversion as an ongoing process after baptism and the work we are doing to cooperate with God and His grace to close that gap between He and us by turning away from sin and by orienting ourselves and setting our face to Calvary and orienting ourselves to Christ. The question for the readings at Mass for the second week of Sunday is, how's your obedience going? Or better yet, how's your trusting in God doing? How's your trusting in Jesus going? And I'm not asking you to be like Abraham, right? To offer up your son on an altar, even to build an altar, you know, if God was demanding that of you. I'm not asking you that question. I'm not asking you if you trust the Lord as much as the apostles did when they were confused and terrified and seeing Jesus being transfigured before their very eyes and seeing Moses and Elijah encounter Jesus and hearing the voice of God saying, "This is my beloved son, listen to him." I'm not asking you to compare yourself to anyone else, but it's just a simple question. How's your trust in the Lord going? What areas of your life do not belong to God? What areas of your life do you not trust God completely? What areas of your life do you think you do a better job managing your life than God does? The easiest way to come up with the answer to the question to know how's your trust in the Lord going, how's it going, is what are those things you do not ask God for help with? Is it your job, your marriage, your future spouse, your finances? How's your trust in the Lord going? Right. I'll say that the readings we hear during Lent are geared towards that deeper self-examination. So I remember it had to be, maybe 11 years ago since today. I remember I was going through a tough time. And I felt isolated. I think depression was setting in. It was hard. And I found myself homeless. This is the night when I found myself homeless for about a night. I was homeless. And it was cold that night. And I didn't feel like I had anyone to turn to. So, yeah, I was isolated, lonely. And I think I could probably went over to someone's house, right? Knocked on their door and said, "Hey, can I stay here for the night?" But I think I was just too embarrassed. I didn't want anyone to have pity on me. So I called my friend Rose, who I call my spiritual mother in the faith, and I invited her to my pity party, right? And she refused to come. And she basically told me to man up. And she prayed a rosary for me on the show. Manning up, on the phone, she prayed a rosary for me. And manning up in a worldly perspective tends to mean just to rely on yourself to figure out your situation on yourself. But in a Christian sense, it means trusting God to do the work. Trust God and do the work. Pray as if everything depends on God and trust that while you're doing the work, God is right there by your side. And I think if you look back on your life, I think you can find that time when you trusted God completely with something. How did that turn out? If I know anything about God, I think the long-term and maybe short-term answer to that question is that it turned out pretty good, didn't it? Trusting God works. Keep trusting God, because that is the question during this second week of Lent. How's your trust in God going? If you're just tuning in to the David L. Gray Show, Voicing Truth and Reason, we are about to take a break here shortly, and we will be back. When we come back, we'll be speaking with Timothy S. Flanders about everything culture, and we will be back in 2 minutes.
Guess what? We have a big announcement to make.
A big announcement? Dave, I'm not dressed up enough for something like that. I need to do my hair, my makeup, find new clothes.
Whoa, whoa, Cecil, we're on the radio, remember?
Oh, yeah. So what's the big news?
Well, I just found out that Friday, March 5th at 7:10 a.m. on the Catholic Drive Time Show is when we're going to be doing the Guadalupe Radio Network car raffle drawing.
Really? That's when we'll find out who won the 2021 Mercedes-Benz GLA 250 SUV?
Yep.
Wow, you definitely don't want to miss that. Tune into the Catholic Drive Time on Friday, March 5th at 7:10 a.m. to hear who the lucky winner is.
Access to clean water is something we often take for granted. When we turn on a faucet, out pours clean water that's safe for drinking. But that's not true in countries like Kenya, where the number one cause of child mortality is from drinking contaminated water. Together we can change that. Cross Catholic Outreach works with local Catholic partners around the world to transform the lives of families living in poverty. Join this mission at crosscatholic.org/bless.
The universe is filled with order from top to bottom. And it's a beautiful order. And not only is it beautiful, it's order that we can actually comprehend. And it's almost as if we have been made to be able to comprehend that order in the universe, to be able to contemplate it so that we can see maybe that purpose behind it.
Please visit Father Spitzer's website, magiscenter.com, to watch this beautiful and important video about purpose and God's creation. That's magiscenter.com.
Looking for a Catholic university where the greatest works of Western and Catholic tradition are the foundation for learning, all in an environment that is faithful to the magisterium? Recommended by the Cardinal Newman Society, the University of Dallas offers an exceptional liberal arts education, preserving the wisdom of the past while preparing students for world-changing futures. Academically excellent, always faithful. Apply today at udallas.edu.
And to the David L. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason on the Guadalupe Radio Network. In the studio now, we have Mr. Timothy S. Flanders, who's the editor-in-chief of Our Lady Victory Press and a producer of the media and content you find at the Meaning of Catholic Apostolate. How's it going, Timothy?
Jesus is King. Can you hear me?
Amen. Amen.
All awesome. Right.
Thanks for coming in, man.
It's a pleasure to speak with you always, David. How you doing?
Yes, sir. Hey, how's your Lent going?
Oh, it's a blessed Lent. It's great. How's yours going?
Yeah, it's going awesome, man. I was talking earlier about it's the second week of Lent. You know, the readings are oriented towards obedience and trust. You know, we were talking about Abraham and in apostles on the Mount of Transfiguration. So yeah, it's definitely something I'm working on. I think the one thing that I've been trying to work on this Lent was I've been trying to pray that the office every morning, right? And so not going great, Right. But I noticed that I think I'm at 3 days a week now. And I noticed that the more you pray the office, the more you develop a prayerful attitude. I find myself praying more throughout the day by developing this habit of prayer.
Yeah, definitely. It's great when you can get into really habituate that virtue.
Yeah.
So that it feels like you are missing something if you haven't done it.
Exactly. 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 Yeah. Good habits. And so, man, I'm excited to have you on the show today to talk about culture, because I know we had talked a little while ago, and I know you're working on a book. And but culture is like a huge conversation. I mean, you have cancel culture, you have Catholic cultures like the Irish, German, you have pop culture, you have culture sometimes associated with race. So like, oh, you know, this race has a certain culture. Some people have culture, right? And some don't, right? Sometimes you say, oh yeah, this person he's cultured, which means they're refined or something like that. But you know, great conversations have great definitions. Define culture.
Well, my definition of culture comes from in my opinion, the greatest Catholic historian of the 20th century, Christopher Dawson. And it's my attempt to summarize his work, which is essentially culture breaks down to four elements.
Okay.
The first and most important element is cultus, which is a religious rite, a religious ritual, which forms the community. And this is completely universal. Every single culture before 1776 has, before even the Dutch Revolution, 1581, has a public cultus, a public rite. You have the Persian Empire, the Zoroastrians, Roman Empire had the paganism, the Christian Empire had Christian rites. It's all over. So you have the cultus. That's the most important part. From that flows everything else. And then you have tradition, which includes everything that's passed down whatsoever. So that goes everything from morals to cuisine to music to dance, everything that's passed down. The third element is elders. There is a certain office in the culture whose job is to guard that tradition, pass it down to the next generation. And then the fourth element is piety, and piety is the obligation of the next generation to revere their ancestors and receive that tradition and pass it down. So I submit that based on this definition, what we live in is actually an anti-culture, because it's missing, first of all, the cultus. It's anti-tradition. It was founded in America and various liberal societies on a rebellion against certain aspects of the tradition. And that's why, especially in the 20th century, you have these different demarcations of generations. You have, oh, it's the greatest generation. Oh, it's the boomer generation. Every generation is recreating itself, which is anti-culture. It's not the generations are disintegrating. Parents, children are rebelling against parents, parents against children. There's this disunity between these generations. And that's the effect of anti-culture.
Wow. So run down those 4 points again. What are those four keys to culture?
Yeah. So the most important part is cultus, which is a religious rite. And so cultus is also related to cultivate, but it's just a religious rite of any kind. It's just supplicating the supernatural as a part of the public act of the people. Okay. And so then you have the cultus, you've got the tradition, everything passed down. You have the elders whose office to do that passing down, everything from parents to priests. And then you have the piety, which is the next generation. They have to receive that, pass it down with reverence.
You know, you just helped me out a whole lot. I want to build on this some more, as I've been having a conversation with people, and they don't believe me when I tell them that Black Americans, we don't have a culture. We don't. There's no such thing as a Black culture in the United States, because I was just looking at it in a sense of it was missing. So I think culture has some key elements. I wasn't looking at like you were. I was looking at in a more sense. Well, I think during slave times, we could say that the Blacks who were in slavery, I think there was a slave culture. I was looking at there's a way that they did things. There was something that they produced, right? And that's one element I see with many cultures throughout the world, whereas the Germans, the Irish, the Jews, they all seem to produce something, right? I think post-slavery, pre-integration or assimilation, I think there may have been the developing of a culture. I see things passed down from one generation to the next in building it. But I would say ever since the integration or assimilation into pop culture in America and the absorbing what the media wants to feed you and pass down, that I would say there's no evidence of there being a culture in a traditional sense. But I love what you laid out, these four elements that you borrowed yourself, right? Or that you're developing, that there's a rite, there's a tradition that's passed down, there's elders whose responsibility is to pass it down, and there's piety. But how do we think about this in the Catholic context? How's the interplay with between culture and religion?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the struggles of the Black family, essentially, in the United States, especially because it shows exactly what is the natural law inclination to establish a culture. You have the efforts in the 60s for Black communities to establish, you have Malcolm X, who's saying, I don't have a culture, basically. I don't have an ancestry. I have X, for my name. You have Alex Haley going after the roots. You have Kwanzaa sort of being created as sort of an amalgamation of trying to get at some African roots. I think of African Bambaataa, even, with the hip-hop culture, trying to create a religion, basically. So there's this struggle, and this is what every people, especially people who have been attacked in their fundamental culture, which is just, slavery is just an attack on the Black family, basically. And then, like you said, it just gets commoditized, and it's been commercialized. So it's just more destruction, basically. No recovery of the culture. But I think what we need to look at the Catholic civilizations that were built in the Americas. You have the French, Spanish, and the Portuguese.
Okay.
And you have a completely different situation. If you just look at the history of New Orleans, you have three different races, or you can look at Florida, the Seminole Indians. You have different races who are all united around a cultus, which is the Catholic faith. And then you have an amelioration of the church wasn't able to convince all of their impious sons who were enslaving, Pope was condemning slavery from the 1400s, as you're aware. The church wasn't able to convince them to stop slavery, but at least they could ameliorate their condition. And that was what created the free people of color out of New Orleans. And this is what creates, when you have one cultus, when you have one religion and you unite in this one culture, then naturally the generations blend together and they create a new culture, a new people. And so they start marrying each other. This is what happens is you start having mixed races. And, when you marry each other, it's hard to when you have a public marriage ceremony that's publicly accepted by the community, that's much different than, what was going on in the slave United States. You have the Métis, the French Indian race of Canada and America. You have this is what this Catholic cultus, the Catholic culture, is what really solves the issues of America. That United States has been struggling to solve. It's the answer is the Catholic faith.
Wow. So, in a Catholic faith, I think you also see just this element of being able to pass down, you see this in the sacraments, right? I think in the Catholic faith, it's culture. It has all the elements there to continue to pass down the culture and the tradition. And it has the elders who are responsible. This is what I think about when I look at the sacraments, right? The sacraments in the Catholic Church, they're a way by which our faith is passed down from one generation to the next, through these rituals, through the liturgy. And each generation participates in this handing down of faith, in these rites, in these rituals. And in that way, the faith is passed down. But you're saying that even outside of the faith itself, cultures outside who accept the Catholic faith, they're able to pass down other elements? What are some of these other elements?
Yeah, I mean, it's everything. Tradition is everything that's passed down. And so there's a lot of other factors. Like, I think that music is one of the most potent ones in the Americas, I think, especially when you look. So, for example, I think of Afro-Cuban music is very different than the Haitian music. And that's because the Afro-Cuban, you can see the Indian and Spanish influence mixing with the African. And so there's a beautiful melding of the musical styles. And then you have New Orleans, of course. New Orleans jazz, the legacy there, which is much earlier than what came out of the 20th century. But music is one of the biggest, I think, in the Americas that gets passed down. But we want to make a distinction here because in the 20th century, once again, there's been a total commoditization of music. And so it's not about culture. It's not about passing down these songs of our ancestors. It's not about, you know, having folk music where we sing, you know, the Irish music, you know, bringing together a people in their music to struggle against the radical regime in London. What happens in the 20th century is that the music industry just wants to create profit. And that means just creating a new thing, a new exciting musical style, whatever, especially if it's sexualized, for the next generation. And then that's what they do on and on and on. And that's not cultural music. That's just sort of this amalgamization of a fad, basically. But music, I think, is one of the biggest things that gets passed down.
Yeah. And if you just tuned in, this is the David L. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason on the Guadalupe Radio Network. I'm talking with Timothy S. Flanders here, who is talking to us about culture. There's a lot to still unpack here, and I hope you keep tuning in, and we'll be back right after this short break at the bottom of the hour here. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about this idea of how commercialization or commoditization has really played a key role into what Timothy is calling an anti-culture now in the United States. I'll see you again.
Access to clean water is something we often take for granted. When we turn on a faucet, out pours clean water that's safe for drinking. But that's not true in countries like Kenya, where the number one cause of child mortality is from drinking contaminated water. Together we can change that. Cross Catholic Outreach works with local Catholic partners around the world to transform the lives of families living in poverty. Join this mission at crosscatholic.org/bless.
All right, I've got my radio, lots of coffee, 4 boxes of mac and cheese, a dozen bagels.
Hey, Sissel, what are you doing?
Hey, Dave, I'm preparing for my car raffle campout. I'm going to listen all day on March 5th, starting at midnight, so I don't miss when we make the announcement of the winner of the 2021 Mercedes-Benz GLA 250 SUV.
Wow, that is a lot of dedication. We certainly want folks to listen to Catholic Radio all the time, but, you know, we do actually have a set time for the car raffle announcement.
Really?
It's going to be 7:10 a.m. during the Catholic Drive Time show on Friday, March 5th.
That's great. I just have a lot of snacks to get through now. Care for a bagel?
Yeah.
Why did we choose Our Lady of Guadalupe as the patroness of the Guadalupe Radio Network? Nearly 500 years ago, the greatest evangelization movement in the history of the Americas occurred when Our Lady of Guadalupe appeared to Juan Diego. It was the beginning of the greatest mass conversion in religious history. Would you agree that today we are in need of a similar renewal in our culture where godlessness is becoming mainstream? That is why we dedicated our radio network to Our Lady of Guadalupe. Radio is the most powerful and intimate tool of evangelization. Catholic radio not only provides this evangelization, but it does so in an exciting and joyful way. We, together with you, our GRN family, are working to ensure that these radio waves continue to go out to millions of souls in order to be a great source of comfort, hope, and consolation. This is Len Oswald, president of the GRN, with your GRN Family Minute.
Welcome back in to the David L. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason on the Guadalupe Radio Network. in the studio now. We've been speaking with Mr. Timothy S. Flanders, who's the editor-in-chief of Our Lady of Victory Press. And he produces all the content and media that you find at the Meaning of Catholic Apostolate. And we're in the studio now talking about culture. And before the break, Timothy, you were talking about how you believe the United States has an anti-culture. And I'd like you to really explain that. What's the evidence that you have based upon the 4 points? The 4 points, again, for those who are just tuning in, that culture can be the key marks or indicators of culture is that one, it has cultists. That has cultural rights, it has tradition, it has elders who are responsible for passing down the tradition, and it has piety. I think you're saying that's of the youth who they respect the traditions, they respect the culture. And so based upon those points, what are some key indicators that the United States, there's no such thing as an American culture? Because I think that's a pretty profound point. I think most people would be like, what?
Yeah, well, the American Revolution was an attempt to safeguard the Whig Revolution of 1688. So it was, in a sense, a conservative revolution, which was attempting to prevent further monarchical power. But the problem is that the Whig Revolution from 1688 is itself an anti-Catholic revolution to prevent the ascension of James II. And all of that is going all the way back to St. Thomas More rebuking Henry VIII. Because when St. Thomas More rebukes Henry VIII, he says, you're breaking Magna Carta. That's our culture, is basically what he's saying. The culture is the king makes a vow to his nobles. He makes a vow to the church. The church is offering up the cultists. And you get these monuments in medieval England. You have Our Lady of Walsingham. You have St. Thomas Becket. These are suppressed by Henry VIII. That's anti-culture. He destroys the monuments of our fathers. He destroys these things to try to impose his will on the people. And this is the debate that's been going on in England ever since. And finally, in 1688, they sort of safeguarded themselves away from Catholicism. And the American Revolution was just sort of a continuation of that. Anti-Catholicism was a big factor. The Declaration of Independence actually condemns Catholicism. Many people don't know this. It condemns the Quebec Act, which was when the British Crown allowed Quebec to establish Catholicism in Quebec. It is stated in the Quebec Act. It's stated more explicitly in the results from 1774. But when you have that attitude, you have the attitude of rebellion against hierarchy, rebellion against the ancestors, and also ultimately Catholicism, well, there's an anti-culture there. The federal government did not have a cultus, so there was no established church, but the state churches did. But what you have in the history of the United States is that this momentum kind of flows from the federal government so that the state churches eventually just sort of disintegrate. And Protestantism, as we know, just sort of disintegrates. This is a perfect example of anti-culture because Protestantism just breaks up as the generation go on. There's just more and more splinters, on and on and on. And this is just Protestantism, the history of Protestantism splitting is just an example, sort of a religious example of what culturally and socially happens in America. Every new generation just splits off, and the new generation, it just becomes more and more disintegrated. And another important example is that immigrant cultures lose their culture. Mm-hmm. In America, unless they're very, very isolated and they're very intentional about it. Some do. I think of Chinese, Jews, other cultures that have really kept themselves together. They can, but if they start to mix around with the outside world, they learn English, they lose their own language, they quickly lose their culture. Mm-hmm. And this is what many immigrant families have struggled with because they're trying to pass down their culture, but they lose their culture.
Yeah, would you say so? Since the Catholic Church seems to be primarily throughout the world the leading institution, at least homogenous, in helping the world sustain a culture by passing down a tradition from one generation to the next. What type of movements? I know you mentioned Protestantism. I want you to build upon that some more. Along with Protestantism, what are some other movements that just seem to be Because it sounds like what you're saying is that every movement that seems to be attacking culture is attacking the Catholic Church. Is that fair?
I would say yes, because really the Catholic Church is the fulfillment of all cultures. I think this is where you really see the difference, is when you see manifest destiny in the United States history, which is basically taking from Whig history in England and it's transferring it into an American ideology, which is that America is the greatest country on earth. Thomas Paine said there's been more freedom that's been given to this human act, if it can be called human, more than any human history, anything in human history. You know, this idea of America being this new age of the world. So then what are we going to do? We're going to take the land and we're going to conquest to the West, and we're going to civilize. And what we mean by civilize is to make everyone an American, to have our polity, have our own customs. I think when you look at the Indian schools is when you really see the difference, because the Catholic Church, the Jesuits, other orders, you know, they would go, especially these Indian tribes, which are all separate tribes, especially you see this in Canada. They're all separate tribes with separate languages, and a lot of them are quite distinct, and they go back centuries. And so you have Jesuits who go in and they preserve their language. They it's a total oral culture. They learn the language and then they transfer that into a written grammar, which helps them preserve their language. Now, this is in contrast, of course, with the U.S. government, which promoted the Indian schools, which is where the Indians were forced to cut their hair, stop, you know, saying their language. This was their idea of civilized. That was their idea of civilized. The Catholic idea of civilized is you keep your culture and we perfect your culture. We cleanse it of any demonic elements. Right. We give you the true king. This is what St. Jerome Babeuf in Huron Carol says. He's Mighty Getchi Manitou is coming with his son, his you know, the chieftain. And this is what perfects your culture. And this is what it does not threaten who you are, because the peoples, all these cultures have been passed down since Adam. They've just been corrupted with demons. So we just need to remove the demonic elements, keep all the culture and the language and all the great things about that people, and introduce them to the true king.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wow. One of the things, you know, one of my arguments, you know, go back for just a moment ago before the break. And if you're just tuning in, again, this is the David O'Grace Show, Voicing Truth and Reason on Guadalupe Radio Network. Speaking with Mr. Timothy S. Flanders here, editor-in-chief of Our Lady Victory Press and a producer of all the content you find at The Meaning of Catholic Apostolate. And so we're talking about culture and why the concept is important to talk about, define, and how it integrates perfectly in the Catholic understanding, how we pass down the faith. And to bounce back for a minute ago, remember I was talking about how, you know, I've been arguing for a short amount of time how now how there's no such thing as a black culture in the United States. And again, I was looking how the black community lacks community, it lacks something they produce. But one of the things that I think the points that I was starting to build until I ran into your 4 points was that you find that language is very important in culture. And even as much as I would argue that during slave times, I think there is an African culture somehow that's in place. There seems to be a culture amongst the slaves, those in slavery. They did not have a language, right? They had a way of doing things, a way of speaking, a lot of illiteracy, right? Most people are illiterate, but they had some sort of body language and song and doing things like that and passing down the traditions within their communities. But why is language important? And talk more about language and culture.
Yeah, language is so important. Well, language is what enables thought to be expressed. It allows us to think something abstractly, and then expressing it in language is what sort of incarnates that into a reality so that you can communicate it with someone else. And what God showed us in Pentecost is that he does not want the peoples to all speak one language as they once did before Babel. He wants them all to speak the same logos, the same Jesus Christ, but with the beauty of different languages, because every language can express the different aspects of God and of the same truth. And this is something that is shown in particular with the Greco-Roman culture, because it was a perfect blending of the Latin mind, Latin language, and then the Greek language. And these produced different sort of Weltanschauung or worldviews. So the Latin mind was very much administrative, unity, that type of thing. That's the Latin mind. But the Latin mind could not produce Plato and Sophocles and Aristophanes and all this cult, this truth, goodness, and beauty that was among the Greeks. The Greeks were the ones who made the plays and all the temples and all that. So the Latin mind took the Greek mind, which was all the truth, goodness, and beauty, and simply governed it. And that wedding of Latin and Greek, that was the body into which was poured the soul of Christian culture to vivify the whole Christendom right there. But you see this in particular with the schism between the Greeks and the West is because the Greeks lose Latin. And that's the key. The Greeks lose Latin after Justinian in the 500s. And they lose because in the history of the Greeks, they were all at war with each other. They never were able to unite except under Alexander. But then even after right after his death, they all divided again. So the Greek mind is just not administrative. It's just simply not part of their culture. Their greatness of their culture is truth, goodness, and beauty. And so when they lost Latin, they found themselves unable to unite with the West, and they developed a very tribal mindset. And this was also present in the West, to be fair, as well. But the West always was renewing that Latin and Greek union. And that is so important to all of Christian theology, all of Christian culture, Latin and Greek together, both working together in those two interdependent ways.
Yeah. It reminds me of something I heard from Thomas Sowell. He talked about how that diversity isn't a strength. And you know, in today's societies, you have a lot of corporations, you have the government saying, oh, we have to be diverse. We have to diversify with people, and we have to bring everybody in, as if diversity is something good in itself. But Thomas Sowell, he talked about how diversity, there's nothing in diversity that's good in itself, but what comes out of diversity when cultures blend and they meet one another, if they work through their difficulties and they discover each one's, what each culture has to offer, out of that, cultures can produce great things together. But just being diverse for diversity's sake doesn't do much. But given that, the history of the world, whenever cultures meet one another, there tends to be problems, oftentimes bloodshed, right? Culture throughout the history of the world, we've had a bloody histories of cultures coming in encounter with one another and things just not working out, right? The Bosnians and the Serbs recently, right? Not too many years ago, bloodshed, right? But how does, how does culture, when does it work, right? Give some examples of when does it work the best?
Well, that's a great question, and yes, that's been sort of the question for the dawn of time. And I think that when it really works, that's you really only see it truly working when a universal culture makes everyone at least bilingual. So you have a lingua franca that you use for all the administration, economy, and everything, and then you have your own your own sort of tribal language or your own local language. And when people lose bilingualism, I think that's the first step towards bloodshed, because when you don't have the language of someone, then you're not able to understand them, you don't think like them, you don't understand why they think the way they do. Yeah. And you can't understand what's going on. So the Roman Empire and also even the Persians and the Greeks did this too, but the genius of the Roman Empire on a very on a natural level was that it was able to, one, the meld the Latin and Greek cultures, first of all, but it also sort of accepted every local culture and assimilated them into a universal Latin structure. And this was simply the natural foundation for Christendom, so that this only works in Christendom where you have bilingualism. There is a universal language that connects all these peoples, you know, in a given region, and then you have all these local dialects. So, and this, of course, is most acutely shown in Christendom of the West, where you have numerous barbarian tribes. They all speak different languages. People need to understand that, you know, in France, people didn't speak French. All speak French, quote unquote, French as we know it today, until much later, 1700 maybe, later, when they start to impose a lingua franca and they oppose bilingualism. Because before that, you had the French of the court, and then you had the local French dialects that were very different from each other.
Right.
And you also have the Latin, of course. The Latin is what combines them all into one administration. And so you have this bilingualism. But then when you have the rise of the secular state, and this is anti-culture. This is exactly what we mean. After the American Revolution, the French Revolution, et cetera, you have more and more an imposition of one lingua franca. You have the rise of extreme nationalism, which is exalting this particular nation as the greatest nation, or just the Germans as bad, or the French as bad, or whatever. And then they lose the other person's language. And that's especially when we saw the greatest bloodshed in the history of the world in the 20th century. And that is a key part of that, I think, when you lose the other person's language. Now, I mean, in America, we all speak English. And there's, you know, the Hispanics often will be speaking Spanish and English. But in, as far as Anglos, myself, almost none of us know any other language but English. So it makes sense that we're myopic and we don't understand the way that this other people understands the world, because we only speak English. We only speak one language.
Yeah, yeah. So the arrogance of it all, right? But commercialization and commoditization, right? Again, I'm going to go back, you know, to the idea I sort of starting to develop before I encountered your thesis here, was that what I saw with Black Americans post, you know, after, you know, the coming of the welfare state and after this compelled integration. And people thought the good life was to move out of their community, which is essential to culture, move out of their community into another community that wasn't like theirs, right? What I saw was that as they were assimilated, what began to take over was commercialization and this idea that every 5 to 10 years, corporations and media will tell you what your culture is, what it looks like, what to listen to, what to wear, how to speak. And so it seems like every 5 to 10 years and with Black Americans, we have a different trend, you know, different, you know, what we call pop culture. And we seem to define that, oh, that's culture. No, that's commercialization, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This is lamentably, it is a great, an infamous example of this very thing with Black culture in America, because you first have, if you read the Malcolm X, he talked about this. If you read him, he talks about how essentially you have, first of all, you have the Catholic culture of New Orleans, which is Catholic. It's Catholic because it was Black and French and later Spanish and English all mixing together freely, organically. This is just happening organically. People are meeting people on the street. You have free Blacks and you have the slave Blacks. Some of the free Blacks have slaves. It is a melding that is not being orchestrated by the government, and it's not being orchestrated by big business. It's just something where people are getting together and it's creating, and we don't know a lot about the Catholic maybe jazz. I don't know if we call it proto jazz, but because it's been lost to history. But you know, you see this kind of in Afro-Cuban music and other music that have survived, but there's sort of a melding. So there's an authentic culture that's growing, and it takes time. It takes many years and generations for that to meld and develop.
Yeah.
Now, profits, when you want profit now, you don't care about the next generation. You don't care about the children growing up. All you care about is profit. So what happens in the jazz age is that you have the commercialization of jazz to such a large degree. So Malcolm X talks about how the world discovered New Orleans jazz, and they started to commoditize it. And then you have blacks and whites just trying to make more money. And then you have the Prohibition era, which is the first sexual revolution, actually, which leads up to the contraception condemnation of Pius XI, 1930. This is when you have a huge revolt in sexual morals in the 1920s. And it's being orchestrated and pushed on by profits and money, because the more you sexualize it, the more money you make.
Wow.
That's the way it is. And so, and then you have every new generation. You have 1940, the hit song was celebrating committing adultery or fornicating by an artist in 1940. And then you have rock and roll, and every new generation is more sexualization and more elements that just make more money. I think that one of the most conspicuous examples of this is Afrika Bambaataa in 1973. So he founds the Universal Zulu Nation, and he founds hip hop culture, which is actually supposed to be an actual culture. It's the attempt of a black American to connect with his roots and restore something that should have been there. But what do you see with hip hop today? It's completely just worshiping money. Totally sexualized.
And it's very anti-culture because it's promoting sexuality outside of marriage. And if you don't have family, you don't have the elders, the past. I mean, it's just like you said, the sexual revolution is that's even, you know, and I like the word revolution because that's what it is. It's truly a revolution in a bad sense. But then it again, it's anti-culture. But well, I think we have my producer, Cecil, is telling me, David, you have 2 minutes left. Okay. Thanks, Cecil. So Cecil's awesome, by the way. Have you ever met Cecil? You talked to her on the phone.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah. But we've got 2 minutes left. What's dangerous about anti-culture? Like what's the effects? Why is it bad? Where is it going to lead America?
Well, the worst thing is that it's hard to raise our children in the faith and keep them in the faith, because anti-culture is pressing on them to just rebel against their parents. So we're trying to inculcate in them something and pass it down. But even just the taste, even these little things, you know, the taste of music, you know, the next generation wants a different types of music and doesn't like the taste of music from the prior generations. The danger is creating a stable, healthy Catholic civilization in the United States. I think it was done in certain pockets for some time, but all of these pockets have essentially been erased eventually. Southwest is far more with the Hispanic culture, much more strong over there. But where I'm at in the Midwest or New England, especially with immigrant communities, it's very difficult to continue that. There are basically these pockets of Catholic civilization, but that's the danger of anti-culture, is that it's very difficult to create that for our children.
Wow. Yeah. Speaking with Timothy S. Flanders here from, you can find him. Why don't you speak for yourself? Where can they find you online?
Sure. Meaningofcatholic.com is our website with all of our stuff linked on there. Take a look. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks. Hope to hear more from your work, Timothy. Looking forward to it. Thanks for coming on to the show. So we'll be back next week, same time, same place. And I look forward to conversing with you again. In the between time, you can visit me at davidlgray.info. But until then, until next time, remember that Jesus loves you and is there for you. And live your life like salvation matters. And may the abundance of our Lord's blessings and graces and favors fall upon you and yours. Thank you.
Mary Immaculate Catholic School in Farmers Branch is now enrolling for the 2021-2022 school year. Under the leadership of the Nashville Dominican Sisters, the dedicated faculty at Mary Immaculate help students to develop their gifts of nature and grace so as